Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Stuart Thompson. We are live here on StreamYard. We are also on Spotify, Blog Talk Radio, and Twitter Live. So we should all be there now, I hope, and working very well. Today, I'm so honored. I have Peter Hammer as my guest, talking about Stop Education, Child Exploitation, which Peter will get into that. But first, I want a couple of things before we get going. One very, very important thing, folks, is I am not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to talk about my healing journey. I have been for years now, actually 8 years now, I've been talking about my healing journey, my association with the Gatehouse, which I'm so happy and proud now that I'm actually, not only did I volunteer all those years, but I actually work there now. I'm a program assistant, and I basically, my function is to help men in the program, give them support along the way, and whatever else the executive director, meaning Maria Barcelos, asked me to do, and so happily to be done. But like I said, we're not here to tell you what to do. Today we're going to be talking with Peter about the organization that he has created, Sexual Educator Child Exploitation, or CECE, which Peter will explain a little bit more about as we go along the way. But there's another thing I want to mention too as well, which is kind of related to what we're talking about. Now, you might have seen me, folks that follow me on social media and also know me at the Gatehouse. One thing we've been working on for years, and anybody who knows Charmaine Leverin, unfortunately she passed away last year, but in the process of the last 7 years, Charmaine has been trying through our provincial legislature to get along the lines of like what Kathleen Wynne did in regards to sex education in school before that changed over to our conservative government. Now, what I'm getting at is Leverin's law, to be more precise, is about consent, sexual consent being taught in the schools, from public school, high school, and obviously I can't talk about universities and colleges because we already do that already anyway. But in public schools and high school, public school, anyway, to be taught in the schools, and it kind of brings us to what we're going to be talking about today. So today, please welcome Peter Hammer, my guest today. And Peter, welcome today. Nice to see you.
Stuart, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
So I guess right off the bat, I'm going to ask you, can you tell me what brought you to creating Stop Education, Child Exploitation, or CECE? What brought you to bring that and to create this? Because I know... I posted the link in, on here as well. I would encourage people, especially here in Canada and in Ontario, rather just all across Canada, because it's that important, but to check it out and see what Peter does. But anyway, Peter, please.
So I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. So it's Stop Educator Child Exploitation. So CECE is the acronym. And it's a short question and a really, really long answer that brought me to this place. I'm going to give you the long answer to start with, and you can cut me off if I talk too much, because that does happen occasionally. So a little bit about my background. You know, I'm a mid-50s adult male, but when I was a high school student in West End, Ottawa, I was sexually abused by the music teacher there. And it started when I was about 15 and went on to, you know, well into being 17 up to the end of grade 11 when I quit music because of what was happening to me. I, at the time, disclosed my abuse to the school principal. And he basically, at that time, gave me the options. He says, okay, what do you want me to do with this teacher? And I said, I don't want him here anymore. I want you to move. And, you know, get him out of school. And my brother was going into high school the next year. And so he did. He moved the music teacher from Bell High School to Sir Robert Borden High School, where he continued to abuse young boys. And, as a kid at the time, I didn't put any thought into it other than he'd been moved. So I thought I'd done my job. And years later, when I was in my late 40s, I made the decision. There were a number of events that happened, and I made the decision that it was time to have a conversation with the police to see if what he had done was actually criminal. So I started with a friend of mine who was an Ottawa police officer, had a quick conversation with him, and he said, you know, unequivocally what the music teacher had done was criminal. It was sexual abuse or sexual assault. So I went forward to the department of the Ottawa Police, that SACA, which is the sexual abuse and child abuse, and they ended up having my music teacher charged. Nine other men came forward. They were all abused by the music teacher in the education system, and he pled guilty with abusing all 10 of us and served about 2 years in prison. The similarities between all of us were obvious, that the education system had failed us. I went to the principal of the school, but a number of the other victims also went to the school administration over the years. And we're talking about a number of decades here. And in all of those times, the administration didn't do anything. And they didn't act on what I believe was a responsibility at the time. And they basically let the perpetrator continue, let the music teacher continue to abuse young boys because he happened to be a good music teacher. So when I went public in March of 2018, I went public with an investigation that CBC participated in, well, led the investigation into the sexual abuse of three high school teachers that all abused children at the Bell High School. And it occurred to me that the school can be a pretty dangerous place. And I don't want to scare people away from sending their children to school, but you know, when you're looking at sexual predators, they often find opportunities to interact with young people that they can groom as victims. And the more I had conversations over the past number of years with many victims from across the country, they all talked about the same sort of thing, where they had gone to principals or they had gone to other teachers and nothing had happened. So I got together with another victim. Her name is Anne-Marie Robinson, and we started doing some volunteer work with the Canadian Center of Child Protection. So this is about 2+ years ago, and we were looking at the rates of teacher-on-student sexual abuse. So Anne-Marie is a brilliant, brilliant lady, and she would be the co-founder of Stop Educator Child Exploitation. She did an amazing amount of research that I helped a little bit with to come up with what the solutions might be to making our schools safer. So after most of the research was done, I got together a group of folks from various parts of Canada that had all been victims of the education system, and I asked them if they wanted to participate and be members of the group. Most of them jumped on it and said, yes, I want to. Others, because of different places that they were with regards to their own healing and their own circumstances, decided that it was a little bit too much. But now we've got a core group of solid volunteers that our mandate is to change the education system to make it safer for students out there. That was a really long answer to a short question, I told you.
No, that's all good. No, but you know what? Long answers are good too, and sometimes it you can't just say it all in two words. So, the school. You know, I know that in my own experience that didn't happen to me in the schools. It happened outside the schools. But when I think about it, when I've talked to other people over the years, not just here in Canada but internationally, it's kind of mind blowing how often this does happen. And it happens more often than people know, obviously, because they do a really good job of sweeping under the carpet or keeping it hidden from the public. Although that has changed drastically in the last years, rightfully so, and people need to be accountable for this sort of stuff that happens. You know, not just in the schools, but you know, there's all kinds of things that are in the light now. And we were kind of having this conversation earlier before we got started. It's not just teachers; it could be police officers, any member of the public. You know, these sports agencies, Hockey Night in Canada, well, Hockey Canada, to be more precise, not Hockey Night in Canada, but Hockey Canada, for example, Gymnastics Association of Canada. And I haven't even touched the base on what about what's happened in the in regards to TRC with the First Nations, Inuit, Métis people, mm-hmm. what they've had to experience with the schools. You know, I mean, I've only really touched base on what's really has gone on over the years. You know, just imagine, and again, I'm just a very little bit of a rant, so imagine how good of a job they've covered it up, what they've done with First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people, how good of a job they've covered that up, and now how they've covered it up in the schools, as an example of what we're talking about today. But now it can't be covered, it has to come up, it's coming up. And to me, that this is our first stage, or rather, our momentum for moving forward to what could be done more, like the organization you created.
You're right, and you know, one of the interesting things is, you know, being a perpetrator, being you know, somebody who abuses young children, doesn't just happen in schools. It happens in any organization that interacts with young people, and it attracts those, you know, people that are you know, that want to abuse children. So, it, you know, it could be police officers, teachers, coaches, religious leaders, all walks of life, and because people that are wired that way search out those occupations, they search out those opportunities, those volunteer jobs, in order to put them in contact with young people, which is unfortunate, which is, you know, part of the reason that, you know, our group is, we're looking at the education system because because all of us were victims of people in the education system, but this is something that needs to go like across all you know, all organizations. We just figure that, you know, it's going to be a challenge dealing with the ministers of education across the country and trying to create legislative change just within one sector, let alone all of them. So I'm hoping, though, that, you know, if we can make some inroads in the education system and create that change, then, you know, then other sectors will follow. Can I tell you a little bit about what our recommendations are, because I think...
Yeah, absolutely. Then I have a question directly related to what you're talking about, but please go ahead.
Well, you asked me the question first, because the recommendations are long.
Okay, well, I guess, you know, I mean, obviously there must be a general consensus of the people you've talked across Canada, but what I'm getting at, really what I guess what I'm going to ask you mainly about is, kind of losing my train of thought here. Yeah, so with your communication you've had with the other with other survivors across Canada in regards to this experience, what have been some of your struggles bringing this to the table where they talk about it? Now, I mentioned Levern's Law as an example. What we're trying to where this has been trying to be brought into the system for years. Now, what are some of the struggles you're dealing with today, every day, just bringing this conversation to the table?
You know what's really interesting, Stuart, and again, we were chatting about this a little bit before we went live, is conversations about sexual abuse, about childhood sexual abuse, are uncomfortable, and that, you know, nobody really wants to have them. And I, you know, I'll either start a conversation or be included in a conversation, and I'm never the one who's uncomfortable in the conversation. It happened to me. It happened to you. You know, we were victims of childhood sexual abuse. And often when I start talking to people, they're the ones that want to shy away from it. And so we don't want to recognize it's a problem in our communities. And the other thing that is important to notice is, you know, if you're looking at whether it's, you know, the things that happen in indigenous populations, when we start looking at it from an institutional perspective, when we get into the institutionalization of sexual abuse, you have various organizations that don't want to take a deep dive because then they recognize that they're doing something wrong, or it might show up that they're doing something wrong. So if for example, you look at the education system, which is the one that I'm knee-deep in, but any organization, you find out that you've got somebody in your midst that's sexually abusing students or sexually abusing children. If you take a deep dive into that, then you might come up with the idea, or you might come to the understanding that as an organization, you're not doing enough to protect the people that are you're responsible for. And so it makes your organization look bad. So people don't want to admit it. So if you take a principal of a school or you know, somebody who's responsible for a soccer league, and they find out that they've got a perpetrator in their mix, then people are going to look at that and say, oh my God, you haven't done your job. So we don't want to face it, because if we face it, we see the ugly truth behind it. And people are concerned that it might make them look bad. So that to me is one of the biggest challenges we've run into, where people say, oh, it doesn't happen here. Or if it did happen, it's a one-off. Oh, it's just that particular teacher. It's just that particular coach. You know, the organization as a whole isn't bad. But people don't want to recognize how widespread this is. And that is one of the key challenges associated with actually trying to affect change here.
Yeah, but, you know, and I can actually say the same thing too. When we talk about uncomfortable conversation, it's usually more now people, when we talk about uncomfortable conversation, it's they're feeling uncomfortable, not me feeling uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And moving forward, that's what it has been for the years now that I've been talking about this, because it's so uncomfortable for other people. Well, here I am, all these years later, and I'm still talking about it. And yes, it's uncomfortable for you, but uncomfortable for me. And like for yourself as well. So now there's a statement you mentioned you wanted to mention about.
You mean what CEAT is all about?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So as I said, we wanted to affect change, right? We thought that, you know, we can improve. We as a society, as a country, can improve what we do with the education system. So, you know, we put out this position paper back towards the end of November. And we did it in conjunction with the Canadian Centre for Child Protection, that put out their research with regards to the rates of sexual assault that happens within the school system. By the way, those rates have tripled compared to the last time that they did the report. So, you know, one, we're seeing more reporting, which is good. But two, the bad part is we're actually seeing more abuse that's happened.
Question related to what you're talking about. How accurate do you think those statistics are?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Not. They're massively underreported, because there's no central repository that actually, you know, as a society, we don't have to keep track of sexual predators.
Mm.
And so the research that the Canadian Centre did was, you know, court documents that they were able to find were, you know, if some of the teachers' unions actually posted things online, and they're really, I think Ontario and maybe one other province does that, but you have to go looking for it.
Yes.
They found the information from media, so, you know, stories that were published. But it's significantly underreported, and both in the media but also in the research. So when we're looking at, you know, almost triple the volume from the previous period, that's significant. Because there isn't one place. So one of the recommendations that CEAT came up with is we need like a central repository. We need to make sure that somebody who is accused appropriately or charged with sexual abuse in one sector or one geography can't move across the country and then get a teaching job somewhere else. Right? There are other times in other provinces where after 3 years of being disciplined, you can expunge your record so that there's no record of you having been disciplined for sexually abusing or using sexually inappropriate behavior to a student. The most important piece for us is we want an independent oversight organization. And this is a key thing. And I'll reference back to when I was in high school. So I went to the principal. I disclosed what happened to me. The principal turned around and said, what do you want me to do? As a kid, I gave him a solution and he did it. All of those things were completely inappropriate. He should have phoned the police. He should have contacted my parents. The teacher should have been disciplined. I mean, there's all those things that we absolutely know should have happened. But then if you take a look at, you know, at principals of schools, they don't have the qualifications. You know, they're not investigators, and they're certainly not independent. You must assume that if your teacher and the principal, whether they've got a friendship or not is one thing, but they certainly have a professional relationship, and they're the adults in the room. So they're going to tend to believe the adults, and they're going to be skewed because there's a professional relationship already. So to expect school systems to be able to manage complaints is inappropriate. They're in a direct conflict. So we believe a separate organization that would either be national or provincial, because education falls under the province's responsibility, so that concerns about behavior that are in a sexual nature can be brought to the organization that's outside of the influence of schools, outside of the influence of unions, and outside of the influence of our political system. So that they would have staff members that are trained and skilled in doing investigations. And either can say that, yeah, it wasn't anything, or they can move it on to charges or disciplinary action. Teachers should want this, because I often hear from you know, sometimes teachers, sometimes administrators, where they say, this creates a witch hunt. Right, you know, we don't want people to be accused of something that is fabricated. So one, the percentage of you know, students telling lies is very, very small. But two, if you're a teacher and you're accused of something, wouldn't you want somebody who is skilled and qualified to do the investigation versus a principal, versus a union member, versus you know, a bureaucrat or an administrator on the board? I certainly would want somebody who's got skills that would be able to say, no, you know what, that guy didn't do it. Conversely, you know, as a member of society, I want somebody who's got the skills to say, yes, this person did it, and this is what we need to do about it. So to me, this is logical. The challenge, of course, is that with the exception of one province, the other ones haven't wanted to talk to us. Because they don't see it as a problem, or they don't want to give up the control that they have.
Yeah, which really comes down to this. Now, if this is not put in place, all you're left with is bias moving forward, and you cannot move forward in conversation like this. If it's no different than, well, although. This is not, to me, it's not a great example, but it's no different than as an example, like the police having an independent review board to answer for their actions, right? But obviously not quite in the same flavor, but the same idea. But yes, there needs to be oversight in regards to these procedures, to how it's done, and where there's no bias whatsoever. But everywhere I seem to look, there's bias around. Everybody seems to. You know, people got their hands in it, and really, why you got your hands in something you absolutely know nothing about, right? But
yeah, you're right, and it's interesting because there isn't, you know, in a lot of provinces, it goes to Teachers Federation and
yes.
the union,
yes.
right, where there is an inherent bias, right? A union putting them in a position where they then have to investigate and potentially deal with one of their fee-paying members is wrought with conflict. Right, it doesn't make any sense at all. But unions are very powerful, and that, you know, they're often not interested in giving up that power or creating change. Mm-hmm. And we're asking them to do that. So I'm certainly looking forward to having them say, yeah, we have to come to the table. But to date, nobody has, other than Manitoba, who's doing a brilliant job, quite frankly, so far. The other ones have been quite silent.
And well, hopefully that will change in the future. You know, and it falls back to what I'm talking about with Lieberman's Law as an example. I really hope to shake some trees. And maybe, I don't know what to think in the future, but by the way, Lieberman'sLaw.com, by the way, if you want to sign a petition, you're in Ontario to bring consent into the schools, which I didn't mention earlier. But yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, just with what you're saying, like, for example, now myself and four others, we've created Survivors Council of Canada. Now, we're hoping with our advocating and work that we're doing in the future that maybe we can help out in something like this, because it's got to start someplace, right? You know, finding the right people to oversee it, where that bias is taken completely out of the picture. But to me, which shouldn't be too hard to do, but on the other hand, I'm sure it'll be a challenge nevertheless moving forward. But so what are the struggles that you've been dealing with along the way? And I guess probably this would probably be the biggest one, but what are some other things you've been dealing with?
So we're a new organization, right? So, you know, initially, as I mentioned before, some of the struggles the Canadian Center had was actually pulling the data together. For the group, and I wouldn't say it was necessarily a struggle, but some of our learnings were making sure we're all aligned behind a single paper or a single position, because I think that that's really important. And we had some wonderful conversations while we were sort of growing up and trying to figure out who we wanted to be when we have grown up. And now we've got a really solid group of people that are very much about trying to affect change. The single most challenging struggle is certainly bringing the parties to the table. I'll touch on Manitoba for a second because that wasn't a struggle. That was actually really good. Manitoba has been the worst performing province, right? All accusations went to discipline through the union, and so the provincial government actually put it in their throne speech that they would create independent organization to oversee accusations of sexual impropriety within the school system. So the Minister of Education, the staff met with Anne-Marie Robinson and myself. They provided us with sort of a roadmap of, well, where they had been and where they want to go, and they're certainly going in a good direction. They then asked for feedback from us, so we provided them with the feedback based on our knowledge and expertise. They've made some course corrections, and now they're continuing to move forward. So they're an example of a province that's taking this seriously. They're taking the welfare of the children that they're responsible for seriously, which is brilliant. I'm going in the other direction of the challenges, but that's, you know, that to me is just such a huge win. We'll see the devil's in the details. We'll see what it looks like when it all comes out. From a society perspective, you know, one of the challenges that I've run across just in my own advocacy work is society's unwillingness to actually admit this is a problem. And we touched on it a little bit earlier, but I'll give you an example, or I'll base it a little bit. If you were to tell a whole bunch of parents that school is statistically one of the most dangerous places you can put a child, and you need to take a good look at what's happening in school, parents don't really like to hear that. One, it's really uncomfortable to think that you're putting your child into a potentially dangerous situation. And I should say, the vast majority of educators out there are wonderful people. I'm not painting everybody with the same lens. But as a parent, and I'm a parent myself, I would struggle with the idea that I'm potentially taking my children and putting them into a dangerous situation. So you kind of like say, uh-oh, I don't want to deal with this because, you know, if I look at myself deeply and I'm doing that and I'm not involved in it, then, you know, am I a bad person? So some of the challenges have been to get people to recognize that, no, they're not bad people for putting their kids in school. They just need to be active participants in their children's education, have an understanding of what you know, what the kids are doing, because, you know, we're all part of the same team trying to make sure that our kids are, you know, our kids are safe. But, you know, whether it's parents or whether it's schools, the biggest opposition is actually recognizing that this is a problem. People can look at numbers on a report and they go, oh, that's really scary, that's too bad, but it doesn't happen in my backyard. And, you know, you hear that over and over and over again. It doesn't happen in my backyard. It's not happening in my school. It's not happening in my church. It's not happening in my scout group. And it's not happening in my soccer league, when, in fact, it's happening in all of those places. So the more we talk about it, the more it becomes accessible. And, Stuart, you mentioned earlier, right? You know, you've been talking about this for a long, long time. I've been talking about it for a little bit less time, but it's people's discomfort with it. And the more we talk about it, the less uncomfortable, or the more comfortable people hopefully will become to have these conversations about what sexual abuse is, you know, and how it happens to, you know, the person down the street. And the other piece that is a challenge, if I may, is actually recognizing who these perpetrators are. I remember my children, you know, they're in their 20s now, but they took Stranger Danger, the course in school that, that teaches you to protect yourself against strangers that might want to do you harm. When in fact, the vast majority of people that commit sexual assault and sexual abuse against young people are people that are quite familiar with it, the people that already have a relationship with them. So the whole idea of helping children to understand that adults have to be, that you have to protect yourself is really difficult. Because how are we going to turn around and say, you know, oh, stranger danger is not a thing, but you better watch out for Weird Uncle Jim. Because that's a really hard conversation to have. Because, you know, Uncle Jim may be just fine. So the education around how to teach our children to watch out is a key component as well, not just within the education system, sorry, but in society as a whole. I've gone on a tangent.
And you're absolutely right. But there's one thing I wanted to bring up as well, and it kind of falls back to what you said a little bit, going back a little bit further. And when we talk about keeping track of who does what, now, My point being is, when we talk about keeping statistics for events that happen to our children, for example, now, I think my biggest complaint, I wanted to say this, and I should have said this last time, was that both the health, justice, and education system do not share statistics in regards to what's actually going on. And if anything, what I wanted to say to this is that all those independent organizations, whether it be municipal, federal or federal level, do not share their information readily as well. I'm going to use the word should be doing. So I'm really hoping that in the future, moving forward, that we can change that, because in order for them to understand that, I think they really need to see the bigger picture, and they're not seeing the bigger picture because they're too busy keeping it hidden. So we can't see the picture, is what I wanted to say.
Yeah, you're right, because all of those organizations work in silos, and even within organizations, they have their own silos.
Yeah.
So even inter-organizational-wise, their ability to share information is poor at best in a lot of circumstances. So, you know, and we all understand that privacy is important, right? We all understand that certainly, you know, in healthcare, you know, your privacy is a key component, right? Within the education system, privacy is important. However, we also then have to look at what is in the best interest of society or what is in the best interest of a child. And from my perspective, that should trump privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you've got somebody within your ranks, whether it's religious ranks, sports, or education, that is a sexual predator, I think that once you've gone down that road, your right to privacy shouldn't be more important than the rights of the victim. And unfortunately, that's not the case right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's some really, really things you really need to change, and I know it's going to take some work to do that. And I think an organization like yours and ours and others out there throughout the country, not just in this province, but throughout the nation. We need to band together to change this sort of thing. And basically, I'm talking about being able to collaboratively gather statistics to help them do their job better, right? But I don't know. That's going to take some real-world work on our part, especially from a medical standpoint of view or mental health point of view. Never mind the justice and the education side of it, because they're all their own separate identities to begin with. But in order to get this information so we could do our job better is what I'm getting at. I'm just hoping that in the future we can maybe make some collaborative attempt to make these resources more available for organizations like yourself and ours and others too, so we can mandate and say, okay, this is right here in front of you. You can't deny it. It's happening all the time. And to me, it's like, as it works now, as I said earlier, regarding keeping information like this, they all have their own silos, as you said, and they keep it to themselves. And it really, really makes it hard for us to move forward in this, because I know moving forward and from last year to this year, I've been trying to dig up statistics for a lot of different things in regards to childhood sexual abuse, not just in schools, but in the different institutions. And it's really, really, really difficult to get any kind of thing. So I know that when I do it, I'm going to have to, when I do finally compile it all together, just to give something out to the public to give an idea, it's just going to be my own, it'll be my own analysis, not a national one or anything like that, which needs to be done, or even a provincial one. So it's going to be really, really hard to get this sort of stuff. I guess really my point I'm getting at is we need to work together better than what we've been doing.
Yeah.
And that's not happening.
Yeah, you're right. And it's interesting because with the exception of the Canadian Centre for Child Protection, I don't know of any other national organization that deals with this. And so, you know, the Gatehouse is a really good organization. It helps people in Toronto. But it's a small organization.
Toronto and all across Canada now. So
all across Canada.
Yeah.
You're just located in Toronto.
Yeah.
But then you've got Peace with more an advocacy group. So we're a small organization. I used to be on the board of Voice Found, and I know that you've interviewed Bob and Lucy.
Yes.
Again, another small organization. They do brilliant, brilliant work with victims of child sexual abuse as well as human trafficking. Victims of human trafficking. So you've got a whole bunch of small organizations across the country that all are doing similar things in this space, whether it's helping victims or whether it's advocacy or whether it's both. But because we're all just small organizations, it's really hard to make a big dent. And so I agree with you, Stuart. I think, we need to start as a bunch of small organizations collaborating with each other. You had mentioned the Survivors Council of Canada, right? So again, it's a small organization, but it's national. The name is national. So the reach should be across from coast to coast to coast, because there are so many of us, people that were victimized as young people, and organizations that we participate in and belong to, and there is strength in numbers. We're just not all working together. So we need to start working together. That collaboration is a key thing. It's easy for governments to ignore a group of four people.
Sure is.
It's really much more difficult to ignore a national group of 100 or 200 people.
And you know,
that's my perspective.
You're absolutely right, and that's what we're working on now. Like little organizations like us that can actually, okay, now you hear us, and that's why we created Survivors Council of Canada. People that know our story, I know that Art and I have talked about this for many had this conversation many times, is that, well, I've seen an awful lot of us out there fighting for the same thing, but you know what? None of us are working together. And we're still knocking on the same doors, and every time we open up that door, it's the same response. Well, I'm telling you, if we all knock on the same doors, I bet the response will be different, and that's what I actually believe will happen. But anyway, we're working on that, and that is coming. And like all things, it does take a little bit of time to get the momentum going and actually, but they know we're there now. We've already knocked on the doors. They know exactly who we are now, and they know what we're trying to accomplish. So moving forward, yes, we are small, but we are growing, daily, momentarily, by minute. So things kind of like what we're talking about are actually going to be, well, I believe will be addressed to a much greater degree than they have been in the past. Anyway, that's what I believe anyway, moving forward.
I believe it. You know, we've talked about the last, whatever, 5-6 years, where this has become a more commonplace conversation. My personal belief is the Me Too movement certainly helped that. And I think that was about 2017 or so that became much bigger. So conversations around sexual abuse, even though they're still very uncomfortable for a lot of people, are becoming a little bit more commonplace. And that's through the work that you're doing, right? That's through the work that the Gatehouse is doing, the Voice Down is doing, the Canadian Centre of Child Protection is doing. So it's important that we keep having these conversations and making people feel uncomfortable about it, because sometimes you have to feel uncomfortable before you can actually let it resonate and say, yeah, actually, maybe I need to do something differently. Maybe I need to recognize it. So maybe I need to sit up and pay attention or throw my weight behind it. It's such a different thing than... I'm not trying to downplay it, but a different thing than like curing cancer, because everybody wants to do that. Everybody recognizes it's out there. Everybody bands together and everybody says, okay, let's fix this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to get it, but we recognize it's a part of society and we do something about it. Nobody wants to talk about being a victim of childhood sexual abuse, or very little people want to talk about it. So as I said, I don't want to sound like a broken record. The more we talk about it, the more people you have on your podcast, the more we have these conversations, the easier it'll be for other people that haven't been victims of sexual abuse to have these conversations in an open and honest way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of like, here's a good example right here. It's actually two good examples. And one being is, imagine you're in your home and you're raising your family, your dream of your family is all there, and then you look next door, you see another family where you're not seeing the same joy of what's going on, and you don't understand. You see that the children are misbehaving or things going on, and you don't quite understand. But see, this is what people don't understand, is that this could be happening right next door, and you have no idea. All I know is you've probably seen the signs, but you don't understand the signs, right? I gave one example of, children misbehaving. Well, I know as a child growing up, I misbehaved all the time, but yes, and children misbehave all the time, and it doesn't necessarily mean it stems from childhood sexual abuse, but I know from my experience and how I misbehaved, I showed clear signs that there was something more going on than just a child misbehaving, and yet they didn't see that, right? And then that stems... a child like me growing up, becoming an adult male, and then my second point being is that, the way I was brought up with my age and generations, we didn't talk about this sort of thing, right? And therefore, I'm left with the third thing, which is the bad part of it. Well, I live my life the way I live my life, most of it really, really bad, right? Granted, I'm here now, and I've taken a change around, but not everybody has that same experience. And I could be specific and just say boys. Well, not just boys, girls too as well, women, right? But I'm being specific more of only because boys, because this is how we were brought up. And although I'm seeing that change now, but anyway, those are the three things I wanted to mention in regards to being able to talk about this. If you don't talk about it, this is what could happen, right? And I wouldn't be here talking about it today.
It's an interesting point that you bring up, because we look at people's behavior. So you mentioned that you may not have been the perfect child. I definitely wasn't in high school, and I would say a lot of people will look at, somebody who's behaving very badly or who's angry, and they'll just think, oh, that person's not very nice or a jerk, but they don't look at the root cause and say, what's causing this? Because people don't necessarily, everybody starts at the same, they're a baby, they come out of the womb and they're non-judgmental and they're not angry and they're, and then their circumstances will help dictate the direction that they go in their life. And when you have trauma at a young age, that will influence your behavior. And often people's behavior is bad. And for young people, it's trying to come up with a coping mechanism that makes it so that you're protecting yourself. So lashing out, whether it's substance abuse, whether it's anger, those are normal responses to abnormal situations. But society often looks down and says, this person is just a bad person. And instead of saying, well, what contributed to the behavior? I would say you're one of the lucky, and it's self-created luck, right? One of the lucky ones that you put yourself in a situation where you are, taking care of yourself and you are doing good things and you're helping people. There are a lot of unfortunate victims of, of childhood trauma that can't pull themselves out of that, right? That end up being, the folks that are living on the street, and the folks that are, having lifelong battles with addiction, substance abuse, because of the trauma. So you think about, what we look at as society and think, if we could help people when they're younger, if we could address this, before it happens or when it's happened, we actually can create a much better opportunity for somebody who has been victimized and create a better society out of it, right? By ignoring it, that's not helping anybody. It's not helping society. It's certainly not helping the victim, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, because I'm an example of what you're talking about. I grew up most of my life self-sabotaging everything I've ever done. I've never believed I was worthy of that, right? So this is the experience that comes with from my experience of being abused as a child. And be a man or a woman, it makes a difference. I've seen it on both sides, but I know from my own experience speaking that I was very, very, very self-destructive. Until within the last 10 years, 10, 12 years that I've changed that. But it took me a lifetime to figure that out. And
it's like, good for you. Congratulations to you, because it is difficult to figure that out.
Yeah.
And, I know it's very similar for males and females, but it's also different too. Especially being of the generation that we're at, we're close. Men are strong, right? Men aren't victims, right? Men don't have these things because it happened to them, because victimhood is weakness.
Yeah.
And as a male, toxic masculinity, where it's like, no, I can never be a victim, right? I'm too strong for that.
Yeah.
And so it's much more challenging it's a different kind of challenge for men to come forward. They often come forward and disclose their abuse much later, because they don't have the tools, they don't have the vocabulary, mm-hmm. they don't have a way of expressing and understanding their feelings when they're younger. So you end up with people that are in the 40s, 50s, and 60s that are the first people to disclose, or the first time that they're actually disclosing the sexual abuse. I've had a number of conversations with victims across Canada who reached out to me because of my website, peterhammer.ca, that have said, hey, I've never told anybody, but this is what happened to me. Because they look and think, okay, you're a normal guy, you're safe, you understand this. Mm-hmm. And it's a privilege to be able to accept that from people and be a safe place. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a counselor. I'm not going down that road. But I know, having not had a place to turn to when I was a young man, seeing somebody who I could relate to would have been incredibly valuable. So, that's part of the role modeling that you get to do. Right, which is brilliant.
Yeah,
right? I'm sure you've heard from people, of all walks of life that say, thanks, Stuart, for being that person that I can talk to.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And essentially, that's what happened. Like you and your experience, And I've had people reach out for me from all over the world, and probably having the same feeling, oh my God, that person looks safe. I can tell that experience too. And I'm not going to be judged, right? Mostly, but I've had women too do the exact same thing. I've been really, really, I'm quite honored and humbled to even let that happen, to have that happen to me, right? That's incredibly, humbling that people will do that and to trust you to that length to be able to do so, knowing that they've never been able to do so, right? So, but anyway, we are moving on in time, and so I know you've got to get on with your day as well. So. So is there anything I'd like you to say in closing before we finish this off? And again, I'm so grateful you'd be here today, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. For anybody listening or watching, I would encourage them to go to cease.info. Just check out the website. Take a look and read some of the research that we've put together. Because I think that the information that we have with regards to how to make systemic change within the education system is important. I would encourage you to reach out to your member of provincial parliament and say, you need to pay attention to this because it's about making our children safe within the education system. So it's SECE.info. And then, reach out and contact us and see, if you want to do something to help, that would be outstanding. I'd be enthusiastic. The more people, as we talked about earlier, the more people that are doing this, the better chance we are of making change. Stuart, I am really happy that we got to talk today. I love having conversations with you. I told you before, you're my Twitter hero. Sunflowers always make me happy when I open that up. So, thank you very much for the opportunity to spend time with you.
Well, thank you, likewise. And folks, for you that didn't write down the links, I have them all posted on my links, that whether it be StreamYard, Twitter, it's all there. The links are there. And also Blog Talk Radio as well, Spotify. You will find the link to Peter's site as well. I want to thank you for being here today. Great, engaging conversation. I know moving forward, we have a conference coming up in May. Looking forward to that as well. I want to please, folks, look up look up Loughran's Law and in Ontario and sign a petition for consent being taught in the schools. So please check that out. Also, my next guest coming up February 13th will be Lee Little. And he wrote a book, A Book of Courage of a Wounded Healer. So A Book of Courage, A Wounded Healer. And I stand corrected if I'm wrong, but that's what the book's about. I've never read the book, but if you can also find it also on YouTube as well. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I should say Lee is based in Ontario. He's done much work in Northern Ontario. He's done a lot of things. So none of that, but he's also a survivor of childhood sexual abuse as well. So hopefully with our conversation today and Lee coming up, this will be give you hope to know that you can heal and move forward. Folks, I want to thank you for being here today. Peter, awesome. Looking forward to when we speak further on in the future, whether it be through the Survivors Council or at the conference coming up in May. But I wish you a good day. Folks, thank you for listening. And like I say, February 13th, I'll be back. And I will have Lee Little, author of Book of Courage of a Wounded Healer. So please stay tuned for that. And folks, have a wonderful day. And if you were at all triggered today from our conversation, which we really did a really good job trying not to make a triggering conversation, do some self-care. Go for a walk. Listen to some music. Eat something really good. If you're in Canada, you're not going to go outside seeing flowers, but maybe go online and look at some flowers or look at my flowers that I post on Twitter. But anyway, folks, have a great day, and we shall see you again. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Stuart.
Bye for now.
Is that okay?
Perfect. It worked out very, very well. I didn't see any. I didn't look at any statistics. I'm too busy keeping an eye on what's going on here.
Yeah.
Oops, I got to do one thing here, which I didn't do. Oops.